Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Andrew Peach, and in the early hours of Friday, the 22nd of November, these are our main stories. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is indicted for bribery, fraud and breach of trust. China releases a video it says disproves allegations that it tortured an employee of the British consulate in Hong Kong. Also in this podcast,
we are also striking for the social leaders that have been murdered for raising their voices. Also indigenous people, environmentalists, and even 18 children who were killed by bombs in Caquetá.
Why thousands in Colombia are taking part in a general strike. In Indonesia, dozens of tuk-tuk drivers try to snatch a dead baby from a hospital. And
there are comments like, burn in hell. Or people write, you should be impaled. Or they say, people like me should be killed.
The vitriol faced by a gay Russian for appearing on YouTube with children. I will continue to lead Israel, those the defiant words of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, shortly after his indictment on bribery and fraud charges by Israel's Attorney General, the man Mr. Netanyahu appointed to the position, Avichai Mandelbilt. Mr. Mandelbilt said it was a sad day for the country.
Today I informed Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of my decision to prosecute and indict him on three charges. The day the Attorney General decides to indict an incumbent Prime Minister for serious offences relating to government corruption is a difficult and sad day for the Israeli people and for me personally.
I got more details about the charges from our correspondent Barbara Plett-Usher in Jerusalem.
There are three cases of corruption against him, which involve charges of bribery, breach of trust, and fraud. In one case, it's alleged that he did political favors for a Hollywood producer in exchange for a supply line of cigars and pink champagne, so wrongfully receiving gifts for doing things. In the other two cases, he's been accused of doing deals to get favorable press coverage. In one case, the allegations are that he promised to try to reduce the competition of one of Israel's main newspapers if it gave him better coverage. And in the other case, he's accused of granting regulatory favors to the head of the main telecommunications company, who also owned a news website, again, in exchange for a favorable coverage.
So there's no indication that Mr. Netanyahu has to stand down in this situation. He's a pugnacious politician. He's been saying that he certainly won't do that.
Yeah, he's really come out fighting. Basically, he threw down a challenge to the institutions.
This evening, we are witnessing an attempted coup against a prime minister with false charges and a contaminated and tendentious investigation process. I think you need to be blind in order not to see that something wrong is going on among the police investigators and the prosecution. You must have noticed that the Attorney General's decision is being published today, of all days, in unprecedented record speed. I would say in the most sensitive timing of a political system ever since the state was established.
He said they were systemically at fault here, whereas the Attorney General, who talked earlier, was talking about protecting the institutions and the importance of upholding the rule of law. The Attorney General had been saying it was a sad and serious day for Israel, as have Mr. Netanyahu's political opponents. They've been calling him to step down for the national interest. But given what he's just said, there's no indication at all that he's going to do so. He's coming out saying that he's been very much wronged and I expect will continue to fight for his political survival.
And the sort of defence he's using, he's saying, well, this is just my political opponents trying to remove me. The investigation is tainted. Will people believe that?
I think if they are supporters of Mr. Netanyahu, they will believe that. And if they're not, they won't. Although polls have shown that as this whole thing dragged on through the election processes and also through the investigations, that he has lost some support. But it's now going to go to trial. So there will be plenty of time in the courtroom for him to argue his case and for people to decide.
Barbara Plett-Usher with me from Jerusalem. If you were listening to our podcast yesterday, you'll have heard a long interview with Simon Cheng, a Hong Kong citizen who worked in the city's British consulate. He was detained for 15 days during a trip to mainland China in August. Now China's state media has released a video that challenges his claims that he was tortured and forced to admit to inciting political unrest. Our China correspondent John Sudworth has more details about the video.
The People's Daily has published a video confession, obtained, it says, from the Shenzhen police, in which Simon Cheng says he feels shameful. In another video clip, a man can be seen entering and leaving a spa. In his BBC interview, Mr. Cheng says he was tortured, made to record forced confessions, and accused of inciting Hong Kong's unrest on behalf of the UK.
I've been shackled, I've been handcuffed, and I've been blindfolded, and also they hooted.
They put a hood on your head?
Yes. And then they start the torture, for example, like to put me hands up, handcuff, and for several hours, and then you feel very painful.
And if you tried to sit down or stop, what would happen?
They would beat me, yeah.
Did they beat you?
Yeah, of course.
Simon Cheng admits to visiting a spa on the day of his detention but denies soliciting prostitution, pointing out that he was detained by the Chinese border authorities rather than, as would be more usual, local police closer to the alleged offence. He also told the BBC that to disorientate him, the police took his glasses away. He's not wearing them in the video confession.
Our China correspondent John Sudworth. To Indonesia now, and this headline from BBC Online, which reads, "Bikers storm morgue to take dead baby for burial." Rebecca Henschke, our former Jakarta correspondent, has been telling Divya Arya what happened.
Dozens of motorcycle taxi drivers stormed a hospital in Padang on the island of Sumatra because they were related to the uncle of this six-month-old baby who died, and the family were struggling to get together the money that they needed to pay the hospital for the medical bills that the baby had racked up before he died. So they took the situation into their own hands. They're Muslim, and of course burials need to be carried out quickly. So they stormed in, took the baby, and went out in a huge convoy, one of them cradling this tiny baby's body, honking their horns and screeching for the hospital to let them do it. And they were able to hand that baby to the mother, and they buried the little boy that day.
Has the hospital responded?
They have effectively apologised. They call it a misunderstanding. I mean, there have been situations in the past of babies being held hostage. It's usually newborn babies. I spoke to a family where they'd saved up enough money for one baby, but then she had twins unexpectedly, couldn't afford the bills, and the hospital was holding the baby hostage. So the hospital was quite embarrassed. It really should have been able to provide for this couple. They've apologised. It said that there was a misunderstanding. It was a process that was happening. At the same time, being quite critical of the motorbike drivers for taking action into their own hands, and calling it reckless and quite an outrageous act, given the fact that maybe the baby, they said, could have had contagious disease. And obviously they didn't follow the standard procedure that needed to take place.
And I wonder what the health facilities in Indonesia are like. Are they very unaffordable for people?
They are indeed. I mean, giving birth to babies, any kind of operation, is a huge burden on families. And that's why we've seen situations in the past where families just haven't been able to get the money together. Many times in Indonesia, I've had desperate calls in the middle of the night or SMSs from various family members of someone I know, you know, trying to rake up enough money to pay for the bills. Since then, under President Joko Widodo, there has been a very ambitious universal healthcare program, or BPJS, that has been rolled out across the country, really revolutionising thing for poor people. But it's had a lot of problems with funding and also infrastructure in these small hospitals like where this incident took place. And there's also issues of corruption. So a lot of problems, but definitely moving in the right direction to provide free healthcare for those who need it.
So I wonder whether some action would be taken against those bikers.
They spoke to us quite proudly and they've told us their story, describing one of the bikers telling us that it was a humanitarian mission that they felt they needed to carry out. But at the same time, they rightly know that they did, in effect, break the regulations. So there have been meetings with the hospital since then, with the motorbike drivers apologising for their action, but really stressing that they did it out of goodwill.
Rebecca Henschke. A criminal investigation in Russia has been opened under the charge of sexual assault after a video emerged in which children ask a gay man questions about his life and sexuality. Promoting homosexuality to young people was banned in 2013, but the repercussions for those involved in this video are far more serious, as our Moscow correspondent Sarah Rainsford reports.
Did you ever like girls?
Why did you decide to turn gay?
I'm watching this video where children take it in turns to ask a young gay man questions about his life and his sexuality. The set's brightly coloured, the children are sitting opposite Maxim, and it all seems really relaxed. But ever since the deputy in parliament here complained to police, the people behind this video have gone into hiding. I've got the actual notification from investigators here that they've opened a criminal case and that they think that this video could actually amount to sexual assault. Now, on this document, they use words like debauched, and they claim that the questions are meant to arouse the children sexually. And because of this, Maxim and the producer have been getting death threats. We met Maxim outside Moscow, but he doesn't want me to say where he is for now.
There was nothing about sex in the video. I just talked about my life. But this article of law is basically pedophilia. It's mad. I have lost everything. My family, those who love me. And I don't think I'll be able to live in Russia now.
By this point, his eyes have filled with tears. And then he tells me about the threats.
There are comments like, burn in hell. Or people write, you should be impaled. Or they say, people like me should be killed.
This is the YouTube channel of a popular young blogger called Vika Peach, and she produced the Q&A video with Maxim. I've had a look at her channel, and it's all about music and beauty tips. But ever since Vika arranged for four children to chat to Maxim, her life has changed totally. She fled the country after she was questioned by investigators. But Vika did agree to talk to me online.
When I found out about the criminal case, the earth fell from beneath my feet. It's 12 to 20 years in prison, so I didn't hesitate. I dropped everything and I just left the country.
It's 6 years now since Russia banned what it calls promoting homosexuality to children, amid lots of talk about family values. Breaking that rule can get you fined, and in this much more conservative climate that there is here now, that is quite common. When I asked the Kremlin spokesman about the case, which Human Rights Watch has called absurd, Dmitry Peskov said it wasn't the Kremlin's business to judge. The investigative committee didn't comment either. It's not just Maxim and Vika who've been affected. Natalia Lukina has also been called in for questioning, and she's had social services pay her a visit after her son took part in the video, even though she was on set the whole time.
Hello, my name is Elisei. I'm from Russia. I'm 11.
Elisei seems totally unfazed, but Natalia says had she known what would happen, she would never have got involved.
The investigators think this has damaged the child's mental health because a gay man talked to him. I feel like I'm on the edge of a volcano. I don't know what to expect next.
But in some ways, Maxim says this project has actually been positive.
At first, I'd beat myself up, thinking, why did I do this? But when I calmed down a bit, I realized I did the right thing.
He then explained why. Maxim told me he'd been bullied and confused as a teenager and had some very dark thoughts. But he says now young people who are struggling just like he did have found his words and that video a support.
My inbox filled up with messages. Girls and boys wrote to me and lots of them said thank you for talking about yourself. They told me I'd given them confidence and strength.
That report was by Sarah Rainsford. In a first global study of childhood physical activity, the World Health Organization has warned that 4 in 5 children aren't getting enough exercise. The research, covering 11 to 17-year-olds, found that Bangladesh was the most active country, but even there, only 1 in 3 children was getting enough exercise. South Korea was bottom of the global league table, with only 1 in 20 children exercising enough. Here's our health and science correspondent, James Gallagher.
The World Health Organization recommends children exercise for an hour every day. The data shows most don't. The researchers say it's not a case of children being lazy, rather a global failure to encourage physical activity. The report in The Lancet Child and Adolescent Health says a focus on exams means children spend long periods sat down studying, that unsafe roads mean they do not cycle or walk to school, and that a digital world of entertainment on phones and computers is competing for children's time. The researchers say being active boosts children's physical and mental health, social skills and brain development. Boys were more active than girls in all but 4 countries in the world. The researchers said this was partly down to cultural reasons and that some governments' efforts to encourage physical activity had appealed mostly to boys.
James Gallagher reporting. As you're no doubt well aware, it's just a few weeks until Christmas and we have a special treat planned.
Hello, Jackie here, just reminding you about the Happy News Pod. I want to hear your happiest moments of the year. Just record yourself telling us your name, where you are, and one sentence explaining what was the thing that made 2019 sparkle for you. Then attach it to an email and send it to our normal email address, globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. And while you're at it, perhaps include a photo of yourself, or the view where you listen to the Global News Podcast, or the happy thing itself, or a dog, or a kitten, or something, I don't know. Quite apart from anything else, it is cheering us up no end here. The Happy News Pod will be available on December the 25th. Thank you all.
Back to this edition of Global News. In a secret atomic warehouse or a carpet cleaning facility. That's the mystery surrounding a suspect site near the Iranian capital, Tehran. The UN nuclear watchdog, the IAEA, says Iran hasn't explained why uranium particles were found there by inspectors earlier this month. The IAEA's acting chief, Cornel Faruta, said it was essential that Iran resolve the matter swiftly.
Later next week, a meeting between the agency and Iran is scheduled in Tehran to discuss this matter further. From my point of view, it is essential that Iran works with the agency to resolve this matter promptly. And I call upon Iran to provide full and timely cooperation with the agency in implementing its safeguards agreement and additional protocol.
So Iran says the site is a carpet cleaning facility. I asked our defence and diplomatic correspondent, Jonathan Marcus, if that explanation is credible.
Well, Tehran is insisting, as you said there, that this was a carpet cleaning facility of some kind. It's not even owned by their nuclear programme and has got nothing to do with it. That clearly isn't satisfying the International Atomic Energy Agency inspectors. They say that they have found particles of natural uranium there of what they call anthropogenic origin. That means its origin is from human processing, human sources. And indeed, I understand that the particles have been purified to some extent. This is in a facility in a place called Turquoise Abad, which is a site in the suburbs of Tehran. Interestingly, it's a site that the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu pointed to a little over a year ago as being this secret Iranian facility. Well, inspectors have been there. They've got these samples. There's also a lot of satellite photo evidence of the place having been cleared out, items removed, efforts made to sanitize it and make it look as though nothing was going on there. This is really serious because it's kind of separate, but of course closely related to the already existing problem with the international nuclear agreement with Iran, which of course the Americans have abandoned. Iran is kind of keeping to, but progressively breaching the terms of that agreement. This site, though, relates to Iran's fundamental obligations under its broader agreements with the International Atomic Energy Agency, and to be in breach of that would be very serious and would clearly raise fundamental further questions about the future of the international JCPOA agreement.
How do you expect Tehran to respond to the request for more information, more clarification of what they said so far?
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, so far they've not been forthcoming, although every effort has been made to get them to cough up with some explanation. As you say, the senior IAEA inspector is heading to Tehran, I think, next week, face-to-face, trying to elicit some kind of explanation. It's going to be very hard to give that kind of explanation. What was this site? Was something simply stored there that had been moved from somewhere else? Or was this a site that actually had some integral role in Iran's ongoing nuclear activities?
Our defence and diplomatic correspondent Jonathan Marcus. Towns and cities across Colombia seem calm despite thousands of protesters on the streets in support of a national strike backed by a broad coalition of trade unionists, indigenous activists and students. President Duque is facing growing discontent over his economic reform plans and a deteriorating security situation. This young activist is clear about why she's opposed to the government.
My name is Dalma Daniela and I'm in Barranquilla, Colombia. I am motivated to strike for a large amount of reasons, but especially minimum wage reduction. We are also striking for the social leaders that have been murdered for raising their voices. Also indigenous people, environmentalists, and even 18 children who were killed by bombs in Caquetá. The government has publicly refused to admit any sort of responsibility for this. And finally, I am also striking against corruption.
For more on the background to the latest protests, we turn to BBC Mundo's Juan Carlos Perez.
It started as a protest by the unions against something called El Paquetazo, which is like the big package, which is one some economic measures that the government was announcing. One of them, the one that was causing the most uproar, was they wanted to reduce the payment to young people to 75% of what they pay to adults. So they wanted to touch pensions as well. So that started as a call by the unions, but slowly different people and groups and communities were joining. There were big demonstrations by the students last year. The government promised them to give them a lot of money for education, and they say the government hasn't complied with that. But the government is saying that all the, what they call El Paquetazo, is not agreed yet, that it hasn't presented the law at the Congress. But people are very suspicious that will going on. And on the murder of the indigenous people and community leaders, people think that the government is not doing enough to prevent that. And about the bombardments, that was a huge scandal in Colombia. The government said a few months ago that there was this operation, very clean operation, where some guerrilla militants were killed. And one congressman announced that 8 children were killed on that, and the government tried to hide that. After that scandal, defense minister has to resign. After that, an independent news network said that there were actually weren't 8 children, but 18, and some of them were chased by dogs and executed by the army. Of course, the government denies all this, but they haven't said they are sorry for what happened. And actually, after defense minister resigned, the president was speaking very highly of him and didn't speak about the victims. So people really took that really badly.
Juan Carlos Perez of BBC Mundo. There are clear advantages to being famous: adoring fans, luxury freebies, VIP treatment. But if you're a male South Korean superstar, fame doesn't get you out of military service, as the pop group BTS has recently found out. More from Charlotte Gallagher.
BTS
BTS have sold millions of records, performed sold-out tours, and brought K-pop to the world. They're even responsible for attracting holidaymakers to South Korea, boosting the country's economy. But they won't be receiving any special treatment when it comes to mandatory military service. South Korean law states that all young men who don't have a disability have to serve in the military for around 2 years, because the country is still technically at war with North Korea. Legions of fans had been calling on officials to allow the group to skip the service, but the country's culture minister has said it won't be possible. Officials have been tightening up the laws because there's a shortage of new recruits. Several sports stars and musicians have been given exemptions in the past for representing South Korea on the international stage. But despite their huge success, the seven members of BTS won't be given the special waivers. Jin, who at 26 is the oldest member of the band, is expected to start his military service as soon as next year. He's previously said the band will be happy to serve their country if they're called up. BTS might be happy, but some of their adoring fans definitely aren't. And it's not yet clear if the band will continue to tour and make music while some members are in the military.
Charlotte Gallagher reporting. Now, there are several terms for it: pulling a sickie, claiming a duvet day, and so on. Basically, calling work to say you're ill when actually you're not, you just fancy a day off. A new BBC survey shows that up to 40% of workers in Britain would pull a sickie if they wanted a break. Here's Matt Davis of Our Business Staff.
UK employees work longer hours than many of their EU counterparts, like in Ireland or Norway, but they're not as productive. Here's Chris Southworth. He's the Secretary General of the International Chambers of Commerce.
What this points to is the importance of trust within business to, you know, promote a positive, healthy place to work, and how that has a positive impact on people's well-being. You know, good businesses, responsible businesses, are those that are well-led. They have a really integrated approach to promoting good values and ethical behaviour, and it's fundamentally based on trust.
Now, while this study showed that 40% of UK workers are prepared to take a sickie, 30% will come in early or stay late because their colleagues are doing so. And there was also a wider moral question in this survey. Would you take praise from a boss for work that somebody else has done? Now, here, men are twice as likely as women to accept that praise.
Matt Davis of Our Business Staff. And that's all from us for now, but there will be an updated version of Global News to download later. And if you'd like to comment on this edition or the stories we included, do drop us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. My name's Andrew Peach. Thanks for listening. And until next time, goodbye.